need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to NatureBacked podcast, where we speak with investors and entrepreneurs about the green future. My name is Tarmo Virki, and today my guest is Antti Vihavainen from Puro Earth, old friend who I first time interviewed probably about 20 years ago when he was working at a security software company. Welcome, Antti.
Thank you, Tarmo. It's definitely a pleasure to be here.
Tell us in a few words, what is Puro Earth doing?
We are a carbon removal standard. So you might think that similar companies or similar organizations in the position in the value chain are people like or companies like Verra and Gold Standard. However, we don't directly compete with them because of the very strict focus to engineered or durable carbon removal. Engineered may be a little bit distracting word. And basically, if you categorize different kinds of carbon removal processes to three rough categories, some of them being nature-based and some of them being engineered, in the middle, there's the hybrid solutions. And we do anything that can guarantee at least 100 years of sequestration permanence.
It's a lot to do with the development of technology, right?
Indeed. We, of course, there's a lot of innovation taking place in this scene right now, and that makes it really, really interesting. Our approach has been to make so-called meta-level methodologies, which are rather broad, but very strict. And that means that we are able to allow innovators to come with different kinds of approaches and basically make a claim that they would fit into some of our methodologies already. And surprisingly often, that is indeed true.
What's the kind of backstory of Puro Earth? How was the company born? What was the mission you started up on?
Well, as you mentioned, my background is in security and telecommunications in particular. And there is two distinct groups of companies, ones that make the technology and others that run a service based on the technology. So the Ericssons and the Nokias of the world make the technology, and operators make it digestible for consumers. I thought that the carbon removal space would also need a commercialization layer. I didn't know what that might be, but I asked the question from the right people at the right time, and we started working on a concept that would end up becoming what we believe was the world's first carbon removal marketplace. However, in order to set up the marketplace, we had to create the full infrastructure to be able to run the standard, which meant that we had to have a registry to keep track of who owns what. We had to have an issuance body with certain rules that govern its activities. We had to create the methodologies based on which the issuances can happen. We had to have the verification infrastructure, basically have a network of third-party auditors who would go out and do the verification. Of course, the methodologies don't emerge from nothing. So we had to create an advisory board with very distinguished people who help us curate and create these top-notch sort of innovative methodologies. And then, of course, below that, all the business operations. Now, however, once we had established that there is demand for, you know, credits that are called CORCs or CO2 removal certificates, we, you know, wanted to work with other marketplaces, and thus it was possible for us to step away from that position. So now we are just a standard, no longer a marketplace.
How much there is, I mean, you guys have been around for quite a while, and the carbon credit...
Half a decade.
Exactly. And carbon removal is not that, you know, old industry in a way. How does the kind of, how have you seen the kind of the industry develop around you?
It's really, of course, fun to see that when we started, we had to always start from, you know, what is carbon removal? Why is it necessary? And, you know, the CO2 concentration is the thing that matters. And, you know, we can't reduce the CO2 concentration unless we start, you know, the drawdown. Then, you know, a little bit later, we had to start, you know, explain what is Puro and what is Puro's role in this. And then now we are in a situation that our frontline people, me included, don't really have to use slides to explain any of this because within our bubble, we are fairly well known. And also people that we talk to already know about carbon removal and the value chain in general. So a lot of knowledge has been sort of an understanding of the necessary activities has increased in this space.
The you mentioned the kind of maybe similar bodies like Verra and the Gold Standard, and how much these I say probably over the last year we've seen quite a lot of media reports and the scientist reports claiming that a lot of the carbon credit stuff is basically, how would I say politely, you know, pardon my French, but bullshit. How much has this impacted this industry in general?
Well, it was the reason why we set up Puro in the first place back in 2018. We realized that, you know, some of the underlying principles and the logic with the existing standards are, you know, difficult to make sort of solid enough. The whole concept of counterfactual baseline is subject to, you know, let's say manipulation. We wanted to create a system that would be based on actual, you know, physical, quantifiable removal of CO2 from the atmosphere. Now, we've succeeded in that, one can claim, because the weighted average price of the CORCs has been between 50 and 100 times higher than an average carbon credit. So the actual price paid by the buyer. So clearly, there has been some sort of demand for credit like this. Now, the recent media publicity has indeed had a twofold effect. One, we've seen companies get scared and, you know, taken a few steps back and say, okay, I don't want to have anything to do with anything related to carbon credits. You know, I'll wait before, the dust settles. However, we've also seen companies that are sort of making a difference between different kinds of carbon credits. And of course, we'd like to use the word carbon removal credit instead of just an offset. So we've seen sort of new interest flowing into this area because of this bad publicity. So some companies have reached out to us and say, okay, we need a safe haven. We need to figure out how to, support something that is important, remove our unavoidable emissions, and at the same time, shield ourselves from green shaming or whatever you want to call it.
Going back to that kind of beginning of the process, what's the typical project you guys are working with? What kind of, stuff, plantations or the technologies, or what's the typical Kuro project?
Well, if we look at the statistics of the 600 projects that we have in the supplier funnel right now, quite a few of them are related to biochar. So I would say at the moment, approximately half of them are biochar producers. Biochar is basically a biomass-based substance that has gone through a process called pyrolysis, which is basically combustion without oxygen, which means that char occurs. And depending on multiple factors, this char can be very durable. It's a bit like diamond, which is also a stable form of carbon. If you put it to soil, it doesn't decompose. So it is an exothermic reaction, so which means that you can take biomass, waste biomass, put it into pyrolysis process, get energy, and get also the biochar, and then you are able to produce negative emissions, which is that can be issued as quarks. So that's definitely in terms of number of projects the biggest one. However, now we are seeing new types of projects. Of course, direct air capture is easiest to understand and describe, also very energy intensive and therefore quite expensive way of doing carbon removal. Bioenergy with carbon capture and storage, again, a process where the first part of the actual carbon capture happens when the plant is growing, be it a tree or sugar cane or something else. When that grows, it captures CO2, and when that is then burnt in a facility, and then that CO2 is captured and injected to a geological cavity, that counts as a negative emission. Then there's enhanced rock weathering, which is another great way of doing carbon removal. There's a bunch of those projects. Terrestrial storage of biomass, carbonate materials, all kinds of stuff floating around.
Quite a variety. I think the probably planting a tree is the least cost least costly of them, probably. I don't know, but from the other side, building a new technology to kind of technically suck the carbon out of the air, CO2, sounds like the probably still very, very expensive technology, right?
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And therefore, I would say that there are these other processes. For example, if you produce biofuels, that process typically emits CO2, almost pure CO2. Now, it would be, that's a biogenic CO2 from a production that displaces fossil fuels, which is great to begin with. And then, if you capture that CO2 and transport it and inject it underground, that's a very low-hanging fruit. That should be done no matter what. So, and of course, highly permanent and a lot less costly than direct air capture.
If you look at the kind of the wide variety of different technologies which are emerging, or some of them which are out there already, what do you see are the most promising to have a massive impact on the planet?
Well, that is a challenging question, and one that takes me back to the origin of the of Pura. We asked ourselves, me and the co-founder Marianne, we asked ourselves, which is the winning horse? Which horse should we bet on? And we looked at we had approximately 20 different carbon removal process candidates, and we eliminated most of them one by one based on the principles that we created along the way. And we ended up initially with three. Now we've gotten rid of one of them because of the lack of permanence, and added a few more. And now we are in a situation where it's really a multi-methodology standard. And now we realize that we've arranged the horse race. So we didn't have to pick the winner. Now what we've done is harmonized the climate impact across different kinds of processes, and what we believe is that the one that provides the best bang for the buck, without sacrificing sort of environmental or social safeguards, is the one that should prevail. Unfortunately, we are still in a situation in the market where buyers are looking at these different kinds of projects and different processes through their own set of subjective lenses. They may choose, they may prefer a process that is located in their country. They may prefer a process that is somehow related to their own value chain, or they may prefer, because their CEO just happens to like, I don't know, ocean, or I don't know, some other technology.
Iceland or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
It's an interesting field, and I really liked your comparison about from the picking the right horse to the becoming actually the horse race organizer, with the same logic that going to the casino, the one who always wins is the casino, right? So the kind of the same logic that you could pick the number or the color or the card or whatever, but eventually it's about being the bank in the industry.
Although of course we are not a bank, however, we do recognize the need for that. That's actually a sort of a nice segue into something that we also do. Among those 600 projects that are in our supplier funnel, there are ones that come in fully funded, with everything ready, and they just fly past through the queue and get to the front line, and are getting certified in a matter of months. Then there are ones that have a great idea, they have great access to feedstock, they may have some other sort of unique technology, but no funding. So we do actively sort of do some sort of matchmaking with people who we know have competence or money that they want to invest in this area.
Absolutely, that's cool. The what do you think about the kind of this technological belief we have in some countries and in some, I don't know, parties or the companies that we don't really need to worry too much about the emissions because the technology will solve it all eventually?
Well, back in the 90s, I one of the books that I read in the university was called Innumerating, and that was a nice sort of introduction to how people's minds work with large and small numbers. It's damn difficult for us to understand what it means to multiply a figure with 1,000 or, you know, a million or a billion. Being able to transport 1 kiloton of negative emissions can happen fairly easily. But if you try to do the same for a megaton, you need a lot of activity. The idea that that it doesn't make a difference whether you need to remove 5 gigatons a year or 50 gigatons a year is completely absurd. We are never going to get to net zero, or at least not during this century, unless we do radical emission reduction as well. So that is the first and foremost priority. All the buyers who are using corks today have started and are quite advanced in their journey to reduce their emissions, because it's so darn expensive. There is no CFO in the world who would say that, okay, doesn't matter, we just pay 200 or one or 200 dollars per ton that we continue to emit. No, every single one of them will say that hurts so much that we do everything we can to reduce our emissions first, and then, you know, let's look how much we still need to neutralize after that.
Absolutely. Looking forward from the kind of Puro perspective, what are the next milestones you guys are looking forward?
Well, there are multiple, of course, that are or can be significant. The policy front is more increasingly active. As we know, EU is planning on creating basically the carbon removal certification framework. And of course, we are involved in that. We know that ICBCM on the voluntary side is active with their CCP, or the core carbon principles. And CFTC, for example, the American Commodities Futures Trading Commission is working on their sort of regulation and so forth. Lots happening over there. And we really wanted that to happen for a long time. You know, somebody with authority should define what qualifies as high quality carbon removal, and we are now on that journey. So that's really good. The only thing is that the bar should actually be higher where it is going to be in the near future. Another thing which is sort of probably potentially hopefully closer to today is the SBTi guidance, which is not there. They have told their, you know, companies that have signed up to SBTi or Science Based Targets Initiative, you know, the requirement to reduce emissions. Exactly like I said, first and foremost priority, that should definitely happen first. However, they have also launched this concept called net zero. And built into that is that the residual emissions, whatever is remaining after the emission reductions, has to be removed or neutralized using carbon removals. Now, the challenge is that they haven't given proper guidance on when to start building that capacity for removals. As it is now, you know, when 2049 comes and everybody starts to, you know, buy carbon removals, there's none available because we haven't built the capacity, because building even the first 100 megatons requires tremendous investment, not to mention the first gigaton or so forth. So we need to, in order to be able to invest into this, the buyers, the future buyers and the current buyers need to send a demand signal that makes these projects bankable, which means that they can raise the funding necessary for them to be able to build the first and second sort of level facilities.
From the kind of regulatory side, which will be having significant impact on the market, but that's probably very logical at this point of the market development.
Yeah, I think you know, we've gotten fairly far with the sort of self-initiated, self-motivated, sort of very highly principled buyers who have you know, shown the way. The likes of Microsoft and Spotify and Shopify and Stripe that were among the first ones to be active. Swiss Re, for example, has been there proactively also for a long time. But and now yes, now it's no longer five. It's probably 200 companies that are making slightly larger purchases, but 200 is still ridiculously small. Number of companies that, you know, we need to have much broader, you know, groups of corporations becoming active, not just talking, but putting their money where their mouth is.
Good. I think that's a good point to wrap up, Antti. Thanks for joining us today for this discussion, and good luck with Puro, because efforts like these are needed.
Well, thank you, Tarmo. It's always a pleasure to have a chat with you.
Are you a fan of classic cinema or a young person who wants to discover the best films of all time? Do these legendary movies still hold up?
On the Generation Film Podcast, two guys who grew up when movies dominated the culture share a great film with a panel of young movie lovers and see how it plays for today's generation.
We discuss changes in storytelling, styles, representation,
the making of each film, its initial reception, and how its meaning has changed over the years.
Join us as we explore cinema classics across generations on Generation Film.
Electric Acid. Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Baklaan.
And I'm Eden Upper.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electricast production.
See you there.
Electricast.